Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 73 of Nerd Pride Radio. 73, on Big Bang Theory, Sheldon Cooper says that, quote, the best number is 73. 73 is the 21st prime number in mirror 37. Its mirror, 37, is the 12th, which is also the mirror of 21. And that mirror 21 is the product of multiplying, hang on to your hats, 7 and 3. In binary, 73 is a palindrome, 1001001, which backwards is 1001001, end quote. Now, obviously, Sheldon's full of crap. 73 is an ugly, ugly, friendless prime number, except for that palindrome thing, because, all right, that's actually pretty cool. Give you credit for that one. But ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me.
How you doing?
Thank you, Elijah. I am awesome!
I'm also awesome.
And that's Noah. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore, and the place that Noah goes to drop stuff and then make noise. Hey, Noah, what's up?
Can I say something?
You can try, but I'm a little bit nervous. Go ahead.
I'm also those kinds of nerds that my dad said.
You are. You're most of those nerds. That is absolutely correct.
I'm also a
math and science nerd.
Yes. You're also a Pokemon nerd.
Mm-hmm.
You're also more of a
Mario games nerd.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we got lots of stuff. All right. So, anyway, where was I? Oh, as always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells like the lost Oak Island treasure. Oh, God, and I hate that show. I hate that show with a passion. Have I mentioned that to you before? Oak Island? Have you watched Oak Island? Have you? Yeah,
no,
okay. Then,
I haven't.
All right. Well, you know what? If you haven't, then you haven't suffered. You haven't been through hell until you've watched Oak Island. All right. Here's the deal. Oak Island is apparently a place of long-lost buried pirate treasure, supposedly. And there's a pit there, and the treasure is supposed to be at the bottom of that pit, and people dig down, and they try and get to it. But the pit then is filled with these deadfalls and traps and horrible things that happen, and so you hit the wrong spot, and now suddenly there's some pipe that comes in from the side, and you've triggered it, and now the whole thing floods out, and you have to start over from scratch. And so Discovery Channel came up with The Treasure of Oak Island, or some, I think that's the name of the show. And this was, I thought, a couple of years ago, maybe, and I wound up watching it. And it's these two brothers, I think, and they've got some, you know, explorer company, treasure hunting thing, and they come in with all their equipment. And so we follow episode after episode, a whole season of them digging to find the treasure of Oak Island, which they don't even know for sure is there. And we go through all these steps that they go through, and at the end of the season, guess what? Nothing happened. I was so angry. I watched this show because it was like on a marathon. So I spent an entire day watching this show thinking that they were going to get to something. And at the end, it was like, well, that's the end of the season. Ah, gosh, too bad we ran out of money. Better luck next time. And they just disappeared. And then that was the end. And I was so angry with it. Well, now they're back. Now they have a season two of The Treasure of Oak Island and they're starting over, or starting, I guess, where they left off. I'm so angry. It's like opening Al Capone's vault, but they're going to open it like 30 times just to prove that, guess what? Still nothing in there. These people make me so angry. I can't, I refuse to watch it. I refuse to watch it because there's not going to be anything there. Not. I just know that. Why would I put up with that? All right. So anyway, we have got a huge show, and that huge show starts with my son Elijah. Elijah, what?
So that show, I'm betting they're not going to find it until like season 10.
No. That's the magic. They're never going to find anything.
So until season like 50?
No, this is one of those treasure hunter things where people are positive something's there, except
there's almost nothing.
The proof is so tenuous. The proof is so kind of shifty that it's, you know what, they're really stretching. And I don't think there's anything down there.
So, 2 episodes, it's not even there. Let's go.
Right, no. But as long as people are going to keep watching the show and paying for advertising and giving the money, oh, they'll keep doing it.
And they're probably just doing it for the money, and they're
clearly.
What about this is actually not the island? What about this is actually just some weird
Pratt Island?
Yeah, they're just like on a set.
Yes, no, no, they're actually on an island, and Oak Island is a real thing that was around before this show, but it's still crazy. All right, but enough about how much I hate Oak Island. Now it is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind during the last week. And if something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy dandy pocket mod. And the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. Updates! I have weight. My weight goes up. My weight goes down. During the middle of vacation, Christmas break, because I haven't recorded in, 3 weeks, 4? It's been a while, and I'm sorry, guys. During the middle of Christmas break, I was up 10 pounds from my lowest weight, although I think that was a day that I missed my blood pressure medication, so I think some of it was water weight. But it doesn't make any difference. I was up 10 pounds from my lowest weight, which meant I was down 10 pounds from my top weight. Now I'm somewhere in between that, so I've, lost a grand total of 15 or something. Whatever. At this point, I'm getting tired of giving you weight updates. I did really, really crappy, but now I'm doing better, and I'm actually exercising, so that's good. And so I am going to stop giving you weight updates just because it seems to be the same thing every time. So we're just going to wait. Not that I don't care about keeping this going. I don't know. I feel like it's boring. It's not adding quality to the show. So, I will update you if interesting things happen. Like if my weight moves by 5 pounds or so, then okay, you know, hopefully in 2-3 weeks, I'll give you an update and go, dude, just cross another milestone, you know, that kind of thing. But we'll see. Anyway, also just to let you know that because, I'm recording on the weekend and all my family is home, normally, I mean, I've had episodes with my kids on before, but normally I don't record when I'm surrounded by people, and they're not, I mean, they're here and they're going to keep bugging me because they love me and
I love you.
And they love this podcast. But I don't actually have mics on them, and they're not actually scripted in or anything. It's not like they brought prepared stuff. They just want to be around. So they're actually sitting in the background, playing video games and just waiting for an opportunity. And there's going to be lots of in and out coming in. So when you hear the background noises, you know what? We'll get through it. We'll deal with all of it. It's no big deal. But first thing on my master list for this week there it is.
And now for something completely different.
That's right. Something completely different. Just stuff I don't have a category for yet. And, I have actually three stories about my son Jacob, and actually also my son Aiden is also involved in one of them, but three stories about Jacob. First off, story number one. Jake's in college. He's a sophomore this year, and he sends a note to me. Most of this happens through text, and then we talked about it later, but he says, "Dad, you got to tell me if I'm being a dick about this." Right, so here's the story. For one of his classes, big final paper for the semester, and he spent 2 weeks putting this thing together, doing all the right research, and he had everything done. It was, you know, just 8 pages and pages. It's like an 8-page paper. It was huge for him, and he was just really proud of his work. So getting down to the last couple of days before the deadline, he has 2 or 3 friends that are in the same class, And they say, oh, Jacob, God, we know you've been working on this. We're really lost. We've been trying. We don't even know what we're supposed to write about. Can you help us? Is there any way you could share some of your materials or some? And so, you know, you don't want to cheat, but you also don't want to leave some friends in the lurch. And so he thought, okay, here, tell you what I'll do. Let me share with you what I did. And he gives them the abridged copy of what he did. He took his 8 pages and just trimmed it down to like a quick 2 or 3 page summary. But then what he was worried about was the cheating aspect. And so to cover his ass, he left in some bombs. He left in some obscenities and some graphic descriptions of stuff that would be wildly inappropriate for a paper on computer science or history or whatever it was he was doing. But these would have been terribly, wildly inappropriate had someone left them in. And so he sends this out to his friends and says, here's the information. He said, but for God's sake, don't copy paste. Whatever you do, you can't copy paste my material because I've left some stuff in there and it would be bad. And his friends, of course, say, yeah, of course, we understand. Of course, we didn't know. No, we just appreciate your help. Sure. All right. Well, then one of his friends did, in fact, simply copy-paste Jacob's material and turn it in as her own. And Jacob says, you what? And then tells her what happened. And they look through her paper, and sure enough, she leaves in the copy-pasted material. She left in this whole long line about it was like it was straight out of some cosplay fan fiction porno about how much she appreciated his swinging schlong or something along those lines. It was terrible. And she left that in and she turned it in. It was already submitted. There was no getting it back. It was gone. And now she's angry at Jacob for having left this in there. To which Jacob says, I warned you. And so he's asking me, am I the dick here? Did I screw this up? I'm like, well, if you hadn't warned them that the stuff was in there, then yeah, kind of. But since you told them ahead of time and then they went ahead and did it anyway, I mean, dude, come on. And plus, in my opinion, he was doing that to cover his own ass, you know, in case of charges of plagiarism or collaboration or whatever. And so this was his out to make sure that, hey, if someone is going to try and cheat off me, then at least I've got this out to go, look, dude, this is my work. And clearly they're the ones that are being dishonest. And this gal just simply proved to him that he was absolutely right to have done it. Because, I mean, Lord knows when the teacher finds this, the professor, I suppose it's college level. When the professor finds this, Jacob's going to need to be able to cover his ass. This is big, you know? So, here's the upshot. Jacob gets an A+ on his paper, which absolutely he should have. He did a great job. Wonderful. And then he texts me the next day and says, oh my God, she also got an A+. I'm like, you are kidding. Even with that, no, she left it in there. She couldn't get it out. Yep. Apparently, nobody bothered to actually read it. It looked like it was the right length. It looked like it was grammatically correct. She got an A+. I'm like, oh my God, that is absolutely unbelievable. He says that the infuriating part for him is, I could have just turned in 4 pages of monkey farts, and guess what? A+. I did all that work for nothing. I'm like, yeah, but well, I said, you know, if grades are the only thing that matter to you, but you know, here, learned a valuable lesson and you got something out of the class. Apparently, nah, it's not consolation enough, but I just think it's a great story. So, you want to help out a friend, but you want to cover your own ass? Yeah, do what map makers do. You just insert completely made-up material into your finished product, and if they choose to copy you, then you've got them on it. So unless, of course, nobody really pays that much attention. I just thought it was a great story. So story number 2, my son's car. Apparently, he's driving back from his fiance's place, and it's winter and it's gotten really cold, and his car starts shaking out on the highway, and he's concerned about it. He asks me, I don't know what to do. I'm 30 miles away. What am I supposed to do about it? It's middle of winter. I'm not going to drive through a blizzard yet. But, you know, we make arrangements for, look, you know, if you're worried about it, it seems to have stopped doing it, but if you're worried, let's make sure we get into a shop. So he takes it into the local shop, the only auto body shop that I could find on record in his little town. And he takes it into the little local shop there, and they say, oh, yeah, we're gonna need to replace your rear struts. And they give me a list of, you know, here's all the other parts that are going to have to be replaced to do that. And they quote me not quite $1,200 to do the job. And as you can imagine, $1,200 is quite a lot of money for me. So I immediately panic. I wind up calling my brother-in-law who knows something about cars. I'm like, dude. They say that the struts are going bad and need to be replaced. I assume I'm safe to just drive it back to town and get a second opinion somewhere else. He goes, oh, yeah, you'll be fine. It's not a big deal. I mean, he says, yeah, you need to get it done eventually, but you can drive it for a little bit. It's not going to hurt anything. He says, just don't take it up over, you know, 60. And so I drive it back to town. And the whole time I'm driving it, thing never does anything wrong. Not a bit. So I'm like, God, maybe they were just, you know, maybe he just had some ice in there. Maybe something weird was going on. Maybe they're just yanking his chain. Who knows? And my brother-in-law also says that, you know, $1,200, he says, that might be with their markup on prices, you know, or on parts. That's probably a reasonable thing. So I've brought the thing back and I've done my own research online. I'm looking online and the parts that he's talking about, I found all of the parts that were needed online for something like grand total of $200, $250 for every part, you know, to get the struts and the arms and the, I don't even know what the bellows, I don't even know what all the pieces were, the framistator, but everything that they had listed on their estimate, I found all those parts for, you know, like $200, something like that, $250. And they're telling me it's $700 just for the parts. All right. It was like literally they were tripling the price of the parts, not to mention tacking on their $500 worth of labor. So I talked to my brother-in-law again. He recommends a place in town. Says, oh, yeah. You know, they specialize in alignment and this kind of stuff. And trust me, get it on down there. Take it on down. They say, they look at her and like, yeah, you definitely need your struts replaced. They're absolutely right. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's going to cost you like $500. I'm like, well, okay, $500 I can deal with at least. Holy crap. But just the idea that, I mean, I guess it's because it's a little college town. I guess it's because there's nobody else there that'll do it and they just can get away with this because people don't know any better. But I mean, it was like they didn't even bat an eye at, yeah, we're going to get these pieces and we're going to triple the price on them and then we're going to double the cost of labor. And yeah, $1,200. I'm like, holy crap. It's the kind of thing where you're almost tempted to call them up and explain to them why you're not bringing the car back to them. But you know, ultimately I didn't because, they know what they're doing. It was just a weird situation and something that I feel bad for people who, again, college kids who live in that town don't know any better. But it was a valuable lesson for my son. It was a valuable lesson for me because I'm not a car guy. I don't know nothing about nothing. But I do know enough to be able to look up parts. I can price stuff online. I can look up stuff and get reasonable estimates. So I was actually, in the end, really proud of myself that I was able to figure this out on my own. One of those things that like the time I was able to replace parts in my dryer and fix my dryer all by myself. Woo! So proud of myself. It's like I'm a grown up. I mean, I'm almost 45 now. I'm like an adult. It's really cool. So anyway, that was story number two. You'll also notice that most of these stories, I haven't actually thought about them a lot, so they don't end with a good punchline moral for you, but you know, they're entertaining to me and that's why I tell them. Here's the last one, and I'm almost hesitant to tell this one because it's going to obligate me to post up a picture of it online, and I'm really bad about doing stuff like that, but we'll see. Because I'll explain when I get to the end of the story. All right. My second son, Aiden, a few years ago, like 3 years ago, he wound up going off to a church camp retreat thing. And it was some requirement for confirmation, whatever. So he has to go away to this camp. And one of the things that had happened was, as part of the camp, members of the family are supposed to write him letters. That we write him letters that just tell him, you know, honestly, how we feel about him, how much we love him and appreciate him, and just, you know, how we feel about him and our hopes for him and this kind of stuff. And all very sweet stuff. And so we all wrote these letters. And we had just recently done something similar for something. I can't even remember what the context was, but we had just done something similar to this. So Jacob goes to write Aiden a letter while he's at camp. And Jacob's letter basically says, yeah, dude, we just went through this. You know I love you and all that, blah, blah, blah. I don't even know what else there is. And he finishes it with, I've run out of things to say, so here's a picture of me and you riding on a cyborg narwhal and a dragon hippopotamus. And then below that, Jacob has actually drawn out a picture of them riding on a cyborg narwhal and a dragon hippopotamus. And it is a super cool picture. The cyborg narwhal and dragon hippopotamus are unbelievable. It's just really cool. And it's just something that he just doodled out on notebook paper because he was just doing something cute for his brother. It was just fun for him. And he said, and later he explained, yeah, why dragon hippopotamus? He said, well, actually, I started drawing something different, but I couldn't really get the lines to look right, so I just faked it into a dragon hippopotamus instead, and it came out pretty well. And so that's what he sent. And Aiden, when he received the letter at camp, he said that was his favorite letter of all time, that everybody else says all this nice, sweet, mushy stuff about him. He said that was all nice, too. But honestly, the picture of the two of them, two brothers, riding these fantastical creatures together, he said that was his absolute favorite letter of all time. He loved it. He put it away in a little box to save forever. He was very, very touched. So we thought to ourselves, me and my wife, you know what we should do? We should put that on a shirt. We should make a shirt out of just that picture. And originally we had thought that we would give Jacob a picture of himself on a cyborg narwhal and put that on a shirt, and then do Aiden riding a dragon hippopotamus and put that on a shirt for Aiden. And then they would have a matched set of shirts that were reflective of this wonderful letter. And we didn't do it because, you know what? Have you made shirts? Do you make shirts yourself? Because here's the thing. I could submit it online somewhere and I can get, I've done shirts where you submit something online and they give you a shirt back. And it's always something kind of cheap that eventually is going to peel, fade, wash off. It never quite comes together. Or you can do it yourself at home with iron-ons, which is slightly less quality than the ones that you're going to buy online. It just never is quite right. And especially the problem I had was, I worked my ass off to clean up this picture, but you know, it's done in pencil on notebook paper. It's not like it's professional quality. So, you know, trying to clean up the blue lines from the back of the notebook paper, trying to sharpen stuff. There's a bunch of smudges and dots and things like that. And so I cleaned it up as best I can, but it's still, I mean, I thought it looked pretty damn good, but it's still pretty rough. And so we're in Omaha. We're in Omaha doing some Christmas shopping and hanging out and fun stuff. And while we're in Omaha, we stop by a place called Retro Shirts. It's in Westroads Mall. If any of you live in Omaha, you can go to Westroads Mall and go to Retro Shirts. And inside Retro Shirts, the owners of Retro Shirts also have a secondary company that they call Omaha Shirts, which does laser printing for certain stuff. And I don't understand why they have Retro Shirts and Omaha Shirts both working out of the same storefront, but I assume it has something to do with Omaha Shirts as their online portion of the business, where they actually mail stuff out, and I'm sure it's for tax purposes or who knows what. But once you're done listening to the story, if you are interested, go to omahashirts.com, and I swear by their work, these guys are amazing. Because here's what we did. We brought in the original picture, the original letter, and said, look, here's what we want. And we want just this whole picture with both creatures on it. We want both of these on a shirt for our sons. We want to make two shirts, identical shirts, with these pictures on it. And this guy, the rest of this podcast is going to be nothing but a commercial for Omaha Shirts and how awesome they are, because they're really awesome. This guy took it, cleaned out the blue lines, took out the notebook paper. I mean, like in a heartbeat. That was a matter of, oh, okay, hold on. Click, setting, done. All right, good. We've got the lines gone. Now let me clean up the rest of it. He says, yeah, this isn't going to be nearly dark enough to work out. So he darkens up the lines. He gets some nice bold black lines without losing any of the sharpness, the detail of the drawings themselves. He was brilliant. And then we said, well, we'd also kind of like the text on here. Not the whole text. The whole letter is kind of, I mean, there's a bunch of extra stuff that doesn't really help, but just that last line, the, I've run out of things to say, so here's a picture of us riding a cyborg narwhal and a dragon hippopotamus. That's the text we want. But the text is kind of on multiple lines, and so he very quickly rearranges the text so that it all lines up and it's neatly centered, and he resizes the text, resizes the pictures, moves things around, and we're like, holy crap, that is unbelievable. Yes, I almost said shit, but when I was actually there in the store, I said holy crap, because I wouldn't have said shit to this guy I just met. That's amazing. That is absolute perfect. It is exactly what we want. It's gorgeous. He goes, oh, hold on, I'm not done yet. And he keeps going, and he starts, I mean, he's doing zooming in on these spots, and he's removing dots and smudges and little pinpoints of stuff that we didn't even realize were there, but he kept working like 15, 20 minutes after we said, we're done, this is perfect. He said, no, we can keep going. And by the time he was done, from the point where we said, this is perfect, to the point where he finally went, yeah, I don't think I'm going to get any better than this. It was just night and day. It was just gorgeous, completely cleaned it up. And we were so proud of ourselves for having found this place. And they do – here's the magic. Not only does he put in that work to clean up your stuff, give you exactly what you want, but then they have a specialized laser printing process to print onto the shirts, unbelievably professional looking. And it, according to him at least, one of only 20 places in the U.S. that does this. He's got to talk himself up. And it's solid. It is solid. These are shirts that are, they don't fade, they don't peel, they don't, I mean, it is this gorgeous, gorgeous picture that is embedded in the fabric, and it's perfect. And so sure enough, we made these the final gifts of Christmas, that we kind of hid them at the back. And so when everything's done, they've received gifts from all their brothers, they've received gifts from Santa, they've received gifts from everybody. And now we're down to the final things, and we go, oh, hey, what are these? And we pull out two matching size presents, one that says to Jacob from Aiden, one that says to Aiden from Jacob. And both of them look at each other going, what did you do? What the hell did you do? What is this? And they're both baffled. And they opened up their shirts, and I can't even describe the, here, you're here, make the noise. Okay, that's Aiden. Aiden made that noise for probably a straight 45 minutes. I am not kidding. He would make that noise, and then he'd hug his shirt, and then he'd run around the house a little bit, and then, I mean...
And I've never made that noise before in my life, so...
Yeah, it was... They were so excited. There were some tears involved on Jacob's part, because he's kind of a crier. It was very sweet. Best gift ever. Never done better than that at coming up with a gift. It was wonderful. It was a very touching and meaningful item that we put into permanent shirt form. I should write to that guy, see if he's still got that file. I should see if I can get the actual graphics file to save, because one day someone's going to ruin their shirt, or it's going to get torn, or in some other way destroyed. It would be nice to be able to make another copy if we needed to. I mean, we still have the original letter, and obviously someone could do it, but man, that guy put in a lot of work, and it would be nice to just have that. So I will try to remember to post up a picture of this online, because what I want to do is, I already went over to Omaha Shirts online and I wrote up a Google review for them, because they specifically requested, because we were so happy with the work. We could not stop gushing and thanking this guy. At $25 a shirt, by the way, $25 for a custom made shirt with that much effort put in on his part. It was wonderful. It was really a bargain, in my opinion. But his one request was, hey, if you really like it, the thing you can do that would help us out the most is go and give us a Google review and say something nice. And so I did that part already, but I would also really like to put this out on Facebook. And then that way I can do it on Facebook, and I can show hey, here's what we started with, here's what the final shirts looked like, and then talk up how much we really enjoyed the service and that we're really proud of it. And so if I do that, and I've been meaning to do that anyway, if I do that portion of it for them, and then I can link it to their Facebook page and all that, then I will also then have the pictures and story and graphics to post out for you guys. So I will try and remember to do all of that. And if any of you are interested in seeing it and I don't get it done in the next week or two, well, start poking me then. I'll get around to it. So yeah, no, not now. You can poke me later. I'm in the middle of a podcast. These people are so demanding. But enough of that. Now it is time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. It is now time for me to talk about the Thrilling Adventure Hour. Oh, Thrilling Adventure Hour is awesome. Brought to you by Patriot Brand Cigarettes. They're good for your constitution. I love Thrilling Adventure Hour. It is a podcast that has been around for a while. In fact, before it was a podcast, it was just a live show that they performed for years. And it is Thrilling Adventure Hour is two dudes, Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, actual names. And Acker and Blacker write old-time radio program-style shows and then have them performed by a bunch of their friends. And I would love to see the live show, because here they are doing this old-time radio show, and it is everybody is just there on stage. And, you know, and when each person is introduced, they come out from behind the curtain, and now they're all just lined up on stage reading from their scripts and doing a radio show for a live audience. And it's amazing. It is the old-time serial adventures. And it's obviously, look, it's written – these are written as modern productions, and so there's a bunch of jokes. They're mostly extremely funny, and the performances are great. Some of the best stuff – one of the ongoing ones that they do is Beyond Belief. And Beyond Belief is about two really drunk married socialites who can see ghosts, and thus they solve supernatural mysteries every week. And the couple is played by Paget Brewster and Paul F. Tompkins. And they are spot on with their performances. I love Paget Brewster's voice in this. She's amazing at it. And it's just hysterical stuff. They have Nathan Fillion comes on occasionally, and he plays Jefferson Reed, Ace American. And it's a World War II Nazi-fighting two-fisted adventure. It's just funny, funny stuff. And there are something like, I think they're up to like episode 190. There's a bunch of these. So they do their live show twice a month, and they do, you know, two or three of these at every show. And then they wind up releasing them. And the best part about them, absolute best part, is each episode is probably about 20 minutes long, 22 minutes long, something like that. All I know is that when I leave my house, if I start a Thrilling Adventure Hour episode when I leave my house, then when I get to school, where my wife works and my kids go to school, when I get to school, the episode is just ending, pretty much spot on every time. It is perfect timing. These are excellent episodes for me to listen to on the way to and from school. And I absolutely adore them. And you should start listening to them. Listen to them from the beginning. All right. And give all of them a chance. There's, John DiMaggio, Bender and Jake from Adventure Time. John DiMaggio does a lot of the episodes. Specifically, he is Captain Laserbeam. And, who else is in there? They do Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars. They do, was it Tales from the Black Lagoon? Oh, Tales from the Black Lagoon is good. That's one, it's actually slightly more serious in its, I mean, the humor is a little more subtle in the way they do it. But Tales from the Black Lagoon is supposedly the lost memoirs that recently rediscovered memoirs of the actor who played the creature from the Black Lagoon. It's him telling old Hollywood stories where he winds up getting mixed up with Angela Lansbury and Jay Silverheels. And it's just, it's fun. Anyway, I can't say enough good things about Thrilling Adventure Hour. I've listened to maybe 30 or 40 episodes over the last month. Just really, really enjoy this show. It's really, really fun. And like I say, and because it's short, it's a great one to, you know, if you know you're not going to have a lot of time, or you don't want to have to focus on anything, it's just a great one to kind of slip in the middle of stuff and just enjoy yourself. I love every episode. So you guys absolutely should check out Thrilling Adventure Hour. It is just a lot of fun. And that's it. That is it for the meticulously plugged portion of the podcast. I had Thrilling Adventure Hour and three stories about my kids. And now, oh, and look at the time. It is absolutely exactly the right time to move on to the Pod-O-Matic! Holy astringent plum-like fruit, Batman! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped-out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, I will add it to the Podomatic list, because Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. And our first number here is 42. Let's see. 42 is... And let me just tell you, by the way, Ronster has sent me a ton of stuff. Umungus has sent me a ton of stuff. A couple other people have sent in a few in between. Really, really nice. And so as it's getting kind of longer, it gets to the point where I have, you know, one person that has a lot of stuff on the list, like Zimny has in the past, or my brother, or in this case, Ronster. And so I start going through, because I want to kind of weed out the, when you start getting piles of them, especially when people have submitted big lists of stuff. Occasionally from the big lists, there's some weak questions and you want to, or stuff that's repeats that I've answered before, or just things that don't really fit in. And so I want to weed out some of those and kind of clean up the list. And so I went through the whole list. I've got like 160, 170 of them out there. And guess what? I kept almost everything. I mean, honestly, you guys are really quality listeners. I cannot knock, the level of questions you've been sending in, because it was, I mean, there was maybe one that was really weirdly esoteric that just, I can't, and I wish I'd saved it just to tell you what it was, but weirdly esoteric that I'm like, no, if I try and answer that on the podcast, I'm going to ramble on about something I know nothing about. Anyway, so I got rid of that one. And then like two of them that were repeats, that one, I had answered that direct question before. And one of them that was just a repeat of something someone had asked years ago. And so, and that's it. Other than that, everything else was top notch. So, now watch this question suck, but let's find out what 42 is and, get right into the Podomatic here. 42 is from, oh God, it's from, all right. It's from Ronster, which is great. But the question is, how does warp drive work? Oh man. See, this is one of the ones that I was tempted to throw out just because I don't want to challenge my brain that hard in a Podomatic, but damn it. If you're going to ask the question, I'm going to answer it. How does warp drive work? I am no physics expert. However, I do think that I know a lot, so I'm going to fake it. But if I understand correctly, you can't move faster than the speed of light. That's Einstein's theory of relativity. And as far as we know, there's no way to physically move matter at faster than the speed of light. However, space-time itself can expand and contract. Space-time itself can become larger, smaller. I don't understand, but it's the basis of, you know, cosmological expansion in general. From the Big Bang, space-time has been expanding since the beginning of the universe. So space-time itself can change its proportions. All right, good. So the warp drive then... And by the way, it can expand and contract faster than the speed of light. As in, it's adding in more space or reducing the amount of distance at faster than the speed of light. That can be done. So the concept in warp drive is that you would have sort of a bubble around your ship, that in front of your ship, you are contracting space at a phenomenal rate, all right, so that the space directly in front of you is much smaller than it actually appears, and you move through that immediate bit of space at, you know, near light speed from your perspective, but because the space itself is smaller, you've shrunken space, I guess, you wind up appearing to an outside observer as if you have moved over distances faster than the speed of light. Does that make sense? All right, so basically you're shrinking space in front of you so you can move through it faster. And then behind you, then the space then rapidly expands back up to its normal dimensions. That is probably wildly inaccurate in the technical details, but is a good metaphor for what's actually going on. It is much like in A Wrinkle in Time, when they're trying to explain how you can move across vast distances, and they explain with a string where, well, sure, this string is really long for the ant to travel all the way across it, but if we fold the string in, you know, through the second dimension, if we fold that string so these two points touch, then you can cross quickly from one to the other, which is, yeah, clearly was not exactly what they were doing. apparently that video game is really important to Noah. Okay. Anyway, so while the folding of string is not a really accurate description of what was happening in A Wrinkle in Time, where I think they were describing wormholes at that point, it was a good metaphor for what it was they were doing. I think that's what I've done here with warp drive. As far as I understand it, it is a shrinking of the space in front of you so you can move through it faster, and then a re-expanding of that space behind you, I think. If not, you know, I'm sure someone will let me know, because there's lots of smart people around here. So, all right, hold on. All right, go ahead, Eli. You can do it. All right, 85. Thank you, R2. That's right, R2 did all the work. You did nothing. Ha-ha. All right, 85 is from Kyle. And Kyle, oh, did I mark 42? I'm sorry, guys. I hate to do this to you. I'm really out of practice because, you know, it's been years since I've done this. No, I didn't mark it. Okay, good. Now, number 85 is from Kyle. And Kyle says, did you ever know anyone who threw up at the color green? Yes. Is that like Sinestro's kryptonite? Yes. My youngest brother was a little OCD about certain things when he was a kid, and OCD is probably not even an accurate description of what was going on. But for a while, he liked to pretend he was a cat, you know, and so he did a lot of pretending he was a cat. And then for a while, he was disturbed by the color green, such that any time he looked at the color green, it made him want to throw up. I have no idea why. I've actually never asked him since then what was going on with that. But it was an actual thing for him. And it was the kind of thing that a lot of times he'd be in a situation where he didn't notice that something green was nearby him. And so me and Kyle would very cruelly go, oh, hey, look, dude. Hey, isn't that green right there? Oh! And then he'd act like he was going to throw up. He was like six at the time. But, yeah, we were mean to him in general. But yes, I have known somebody who threw up the color green. That is an excellent question, Kyle. And I suppose, I don't know, is Sinestro vulnerable to the color green in the way that the Green Lantern in some incarnations is vulnerable to yellow? I don't know. I assume so. Sure. Number 89. 89 is from Dire Cat. And Dire Cat says, what would be the first thing you would do if the world would be overrun by living gargoyles? The first thing I would do, as I would do in any apocalypse, assuming this is an apocalypse, you don't say that they're, you know, when you say overrun, so we have lots and lots of living gargoyles anywhere. Do living gargoyles need to eat? Are they killing people? Are they dangerous or threatening at all? Or are there just a lot of them and they're out there and, you know, gargoyles are made of stone, so they don't actually need food, so they just kind of sit around and look decorative on stuff? Because that would be kind of cool, really. But assuming that you mean that they're dangerous in some way, then as I would for any apocalypse, the first thing I do is gather up my family and we head out to my in-law's place. My in-laws live out on a hill. They have a lot of acres around them with some really crappy fences. We'd have to shore up our fortifications. And they also own enough guns to keep us protected. And they have an incredibly well-stocked fruit cellar that has all sorts of preserved food and stuff that could keep us going for a while. So we would have the tools we needed. We have a good defensible location. We have some animals and livestock out there. We have some available land to be working with. And we have weapons, supplies. They've got tools of all sorts in their garden sheds. We've got tractors. There's all sorts of things we could be doing out there. So if the world were overrun by living gargoyles, the very first thing I would do is it's in my standard apocalypse prep book. I use it for every. I mean, it doesn't matter. Is it zombies? All right. Is it killer tornadoes? Is it alien invasion? Is it living gargoyles? Doesn't make any difference. Is it the world is overrun by billions of gingerbread men? I don't care. Every apocalypse is the same. gather up my family, make sure everyone is safe, and get the hell out to the in-laws' place because they have all the stuff we need. They are well prepared for an apocalypse. They're not intentionally preparing for an apocalypse, but they are ready in case one comes around just by the nature of how they live their lives. It's actually really convenient. It means I don't have to do nothing. It's really cool. 44. 44 is a number that is less than 89. So I roll up and it is from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Ron says, would you donate your body to science if you had a rare disease? If not, why not? No, of course I would. If I had a rare disease and doctors approached me and said, hey, look, we hate to ask you this, but you know, when you're gone, it would be really, really valuable to us if we could, you know, cut you open, dissect you, play around with your innards, that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, of course I would. Absolutely. Well, what do I care? I'm dead. I mean, look, take the parts you need, and whenever you're done with the rest, give it back to my family for a proper cremation and let them dispose of it in whatever way we've chosen. That would be great. But, yeah, of course I would. I also am more than happy to be an organ donor if there's something they can do. Hold on just 2 seconds. Noah?
What?
Again, he's really excited, and he's 8. What are you going to do? So, yeah, I have no problem with donating part or all of my body to science if I feel it's going to do somebody some good, if it's going to be valuable, especially in the case of if I have a rare disease, then probably at that point I've met other people with this disease or I know about them, I've done my research, and my heart would go out to them even more than I would for someone suffering from any other random deadly disease. So, yeah, of course I would. I think that's a great idea. 12. R2 says 12. 12 is a question that came in from the Ronster. All right, we haven't heard from Ron yet. And Ron says, what number are we on? Is this 5? 6? We're on number 5, but I'm going to put 6 just in case. Ronster says, do you have a favorite vacation spot? All right, my traditional favorite vacation spot is Mexico Beach, Florida. Mexico Beach, Florida is just a gorgeous little white sand beach in the panhandle of Florida, about an hour's drive down from Panama City, which is where MTV has done Spring Break many times in the past. And it's still a wild, crazy, drunken, packed Spring Break town during that time. But my family went to Mexico Beach, Florida, at least once every summer for almost all of my years growing up. I love Mexico Beach. It is just beautiful. I mean, my grandparents retired there. My grandfather was even the mayor of the town for a little while. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous place, and it just has a lot of really good memories. And I haven't been there since there was the summer that my brother got married and we went down, and then we went back again a little bit later when, I guess, Aiden was just born. So that must have been summer of 98, maybe 99, maybe. I can't remember how old he was. I think it was 98. So it's been a lot of years since I've been there, but great, great vacation spot. But since our kids have gotten older and we're married and we've been trying to actually find different experiences, every time we have a chance for a vacation. And so, you know, we went to Yellowstone and loved our Yellowstone vacation, one of the best times we've had together on a family trip. We just did Custer State Park this last summer, and Custer was amazing. We've been to the Black Hills many times. There's lots of stuff we've done that I can't really narrow down, but my favorite spot, I guess I'm going to still have to stick with Mexico Beach. I mean, that's the nostalgic one. That's the one that I've been to the most. And again, there's just a lot of memories of childhood that are wrapped up in that. So that's what I'm going to say. If you've got a chance to go rent a cottage down in Mexico Beach, Florida, and spend a week there, great place. You will not regret it. And it's not going to be as pricey as going to Panama City or going to one of the bigger, more well-known towns, and you'll have a great time there. You know, it's got a gas station and a little grocery, and there's, you know, enough to get your supplies and stuff. But otherwise, it's just quiet. It's quiet and it's not packed, and it's just a happy place to spend a couple of days swimming, building sandcastles, burying people. Awesome. That is, what is that? 90. 91. I thought it was 61, but then I learned how to read numbers on dice. 91 is from Humongous. Humongous says, there it is. All right, got it. I was starting on the wrong line. My campaign to convince you to be a fan of Akira Kurosawa movies begins. Did you know that Star Wars A New Hope was based on the Akira Kurosawa movie The Hidden Fortress? Yeah, you know what? I absolutely did know that. And I hate to be pedantic about this, but technically the name of the movie is Star Wars. It's Star Wars. I don't, you know, I mean, I know you're trying to help me out here. I know you're a fan. You're on my side. But seriously, it's Star Wars. Star Wars A New Hope is something that Lucas came up with later because he wanted to differentiate it because, oh, the whole series is Star Wars. And this one is particularly, no, you know what? You know what? It's Star Wars. That's the name the movie was released under. It's Star Wars and everything else is a sequel to Star Wars. Even the prequels are still sequels to Star Wars. All right. So anyway, but enough of being pedantic. Yes, I was aware that Hidden Fortress was a lot of the basis for Star Wars, even down to the Hidden Fortress has two bumbling characters that kind of they're comic relief, if I understand correctly, and it's sort of there the framing device that ties a lot of it together that we see many of the stuff is seen through. From their perspective or because of the fact that they're there. I don't know for sure. I may be speaking completely out of my ass on this one. But those two bumblers, the comic relief characters, were the basis for R2-D2 and C-3PO. So, yes, I was aware of that. And am I going to go watch it? Got so many other things to watch yet. But I'll look. Here, hold on just 2 seconds. I'm going to pause this. I'm going to go look on Netflix for just a moment. Oh, I am sorry, Humongous. You lose. I just went to Netflix and I checked Akira Kurosawa and they have dozens of movies with his name on them and not a single one of them is on Instant Watch. Because I would love to watch The Hidden Fortress. I just don't know if I want to send for a disc for it. That seems like so much work. Because we like to use our, we only get 3 discs at a time. We're still on the 3-disc plan. We get one for my wife, one for me, and then one for the kids. And, on the 3-disc plan, we like to save our discs for things that are, relevant and important. Like, for example, last night we watched Blood Car. an important work. Have you seen Blood Car?
Oh my gosh. It has such a powerful message.
It is. Yeah, Blood Car. Oh, if anyway, by the way, let's go straight from Kurosawa to Blood Car. If you haven't watched Blood Car, I highly recommend it. If you liked Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, you will love Blood Car.
That is such a good comparison.
Blood Car is by far the superior movie. Absolutely. It is, and just for anyone who's actually thinking of going out and getting Blood Car, which I really do recommend. This is not a joke. I really recommend you get Blood Car. If you go out and watch Blood Car, be prepared that it's an independent film. It's clearly made by a bunch of amateurs. It's the kind where they've got a bunch of FBI agents and they all look like they're 15 years old because it's a bunch of college kids who have just, it's just their friends hanging out. But it is so much fun. It's really well done. It's really fun. It has Anna Chlumsky in it. Anna Chlumsky, the little girl from My Girl? From My Girl, if you are old enough to remember that.
Old man.
Weird. But it was just fun. Stupid movie. Stupid, bad. There's all sorts of weird, horrible stuff about it. Loopholes like crazy. Who cares? It was so much fun. We had a great time watching it. Even the DVD itself, just going through the menus before you even get to the movie, spectacular. So, highly recommend. Tell you what, here's the deal, Humongous. You get yourself a copy of Blood Car, and you give me a report back on how much you loved it or didn't love it. I'll leave open the possibility that maybe you are a classless buffoon who doesn't like the intellectual stylings of Blood Car. That's possible.
Intellectual.
No commentary from the Peanut Gallery. You. you watch Blood Car and then tell me how awesome it was or not awesome in your opinion. Great. Whatever you feel. You're allowed. You're entitled to your opinion. And then you do that. And then I will watch I will use my next pick on Netflix for the Kurosawa movie of your choice. All right. So you pick what you think would be the best introduction to Kurosawa. I mean, you just mentioned Hidden Fortress, which, okay, that may be a good start, but I don't know. What is the best Kurosawa movie for someone who, just has never tried it? I will leave it entirely up to you. So you get back to me. We will do this thing. But first you watch Blood Car because it's awesome. 31 is, oh God, it's barely off the screen. There it is. It's from Zimney Pot. Oh, I've missed you, Zimney. I don't think Zimney listens anymore. I think he finally gave up on me. I think I said that last time, but I miss Zim. I'm sorry. Zimney says, the Back to the Future movies had a time-traveling car, Doctor Who, a police public call box. Well, the TARDIS looks like one anyway. What would your time machine look like? I know I answered this at some point. I had to have. My time machine is Baba Yaga's hut. My time machine is absolutely Baba Yaga's hut. I am on
house with legs.
I am on an old Russian shack with giant chicken legs under it, and I am using that sucker with all of its extra-dimensional space, its ability to fold itself tesseract-like, and I am using that to step through space and time to wherever the world needs me. You know what? If it weren't so Doctor Who-ish, I need to write that up, because that actually sounds like a lot of fun. You know what? If I'm going to write my Doctor Who ripoff, it is going to start with someone who has acquired Baba Yaga's hut. And now, having said that, I also know that my version of Baba Yaga's hut is highly influenced by the D&D version of it, and therefore I really need to look more into the original legends and see what would be a little more period accurate, because I'm pretty sure Baba Yaga is public domain at this point, so I could do whatever the hell I want with it. But it would be nice to have something that to have my take on it more inspired by the original than inspired by Dungeons and Dragons. You know what I mean? So, but yes, absolutely, Baba Yaga's hut is my time machine. There's no question about it. No other way to go. Number 30. 30 is from Humongous again. Oh, I love Humongous. Humongous says, bacon or sausage? Sausage.
Bacon.
What? Okay, you don't get to keep talking when R2 is rolling, but if you want to argue about it, no, bacon's overrated and hipsterish, and I love bacon. I love bacon. I love bacon. I can't tell you how much I love bacon. Bacon's awesome. However, if given the choice, I will always pick sausage over bacon. If I go to McDonald's and get myself a McGriddle, if I go to Burger King and get myself a croissant sandwich, if I am at Perkins or Village Inn or one of these breakfast for supper places, Denny's even, and I'm getting myself a meal that has a choice of bacon or sausage, I'm always getting sausage. Always. Because bacon is just not as good as sausage. Even bad sausage is awesome. I mean, even bad bacon is good. I have no qualms with bacon. Bacon's wonderful. I do love bacon. But sausage is way better, always, all the time. Now, do you want to have a defense of bacon?
No, you just make me sick.
Oh, come on now. You can even get on mic if you want.
No, I'm good. You've lost all the trust I ever had for you.
Look, I'm just saying you can like bacon better than sausage. You can say that bacon is the ultimate foodstuff. You could put a mustache on it.
And call it Sean Connery? What were you?
You
going
can put
with
a
this?
Mustache on it and go out and vape with it and be as hipster douchey as you want. You go right ahead. Oh,
do you want me to go get the fedora?
Yeah, I was just gonna say you even have the fedora. Get your newsy cap. I like that one better. It looks better on you. He's gonna go get his newsy cap. No, I bet he comes back with a fedora, a white one. Oh, the fedora. All right, he's not here, so he can't hear me. But don't tell him. I hate the fedora. You're not helping me, dude. Can't stand the fedora. The newsy cap? The newsy is actually still pretty hipstery, but he looks good in the newsy cap. His mom hates it, but I love the newsy cap. All right, quick. Before he gets back, we've already rolled. 54. 54 is from Humongous again. All right. Hey, Humongous. Did you ever play Gamma World? Of course I played Gamma World. Not much and not well. Never got into it. I just didn't care for it. I understand the premise of he's wearing the fedora on top of the newsy cap. He's managed to ruin the newsy cap for me. It's all right. Just so you guys know that he's here and he has two hats on. And he looks awesome. He is dreamy. So anyway, Gamma World was just not really in my wheelhouse, and I don't know why. I think, again, when I got it, when I was a kid, I think I was so used to D&D, and I wanted to play it more in that style, and it's just, at that age, I've discussed this sort of thing before. When I was young and I was first gaming, there are some worlds that you already had that you kind of knew, like Dungeons and Dragons. Look, it's Tolkien. It's swords and sorcery. It's fantasy. You knew what Dungeons and Dragons looked like. You knew what the world was. And so you just kind of stepped into that world. Gamma World, with its mutants and its post-apocalyptic stuff, I didn't have a direct analog to just step right into Gamma World, to just step right into, I mean, was I supposed to play at Mad Maxi? Was it supposed to be more comedy? Was it supposed to be, there was not enough guideline for me as a 13-year-old to realize what it was I was getting into. And so I think the games we played at that time were a little formless. And I mean, I remember enjoying it, but I don't remember what we played. I can't even remember if we played more than one or two sessions. I don't know. I have no idea. And so ultimately for me, it just fell flat and we never went back to it. And I know that there's the new Gamma World out and it's been revived and I've never bothered to check. I just haven't ever tried it again. So have I played Gamma World? Yes. Do I play Gamma World? No. I think I would enjoy it if I did it now because I have, many other, baseline worlds that I could step into and try and get it to fit. But I even now for sure, I don't even really know for sure what Gamma World is supposed to look like when you play it. I really don't. So maybe someone can educate me. But yeah, it's something I'd be willing to try again if anyone ever wanted to run it, I guess. 24. 24 is from somebody who listens to my podcast. It's from Mrs. Darks. Well, hey there, Mrs. Darks, or Sarah Beth, as I'm now calling her, and you know what? I'm not even going to make any commentary on it. Not even going to. Just, hey, Sarah Beth, how are you? Good to hear from you. Sarah Beth says, whatever happened to Operation Cheese Nerd? Oh, yeah, that's right. You're listening to him backwards. You've gotten through all of them, I assume. Yeah, in fact, I know you have. Operation Cheese Nerd was something I did episodes ago, years ago, where I was making an effort to try a bunch of different cheeses. I wanted to appreciate different cheeses, develop a taste for them, be able to differentiate them. I wanted to be a true cheese nerd.
Cheese connoisseur, if you will.
A cheese connoisseur, or nerd, as I would. And and I've tried dozens of cheeses through that experiment and since then. And any time I get a chance to try an unusual cheese, even if it's one I've tried before, but especially if it's something I've never seen before, I will certainly dive into that. I absolutely love cheeses and I love experiencing new cheeses, but it's just no longer the passion of, cause back then it was trying at least one new cheese every week and did that for a long time. Not so much. I mean, I still enjoy cheese. I still love cheese. I've not gained enough experience and expertise to qualify myself as a cheese nerd, or cheese connoisseur, but I love my cheese. Always love cheese. In fact, one of my favorite things, I don't even know if Laughing Cow cheese is considered cheese, but I love the Laughing Cow cheeses. If I buy them, normally most places in town sell Laughing Cow cheese for like $4 and something. It's like $4.68 at the grocery store. But if I go to Walmart, for some reason, I can buy them at Walmart for half that price, like 2.25. And so I always have some Laughing Cow cheeses in my fridge at work. And that way, morning snack and afternoon snack, I will just pull out one little wedge of cheese. And sometimes I just eat them plain. I'll peel the foil off of them and lay it out, and then I'll just sit there with my knife, and I'll just cut off little tiny sections of it one at a time and just eat them straight off the knife. And or sometimes I'll have crackers with them. But I've tried all of the Laughing Cow flavors, and I like most of them except blue cheese. Blue cheese is nasty. That isn't even real cheese. That's gross. But I like pretty much all their cheeses. But it turns out that the Creamy Swiss, oh, the best. It just is mellow, and it's just, you know, a nice little filler to, you know, because it's only like, especially if you buy the light Swiss, it's only like 35 calories for a little wedge of cheese. So it makes a great snack. Just kind of holds me over until it's lunchtime or whatever. And really enjoy. I have cheese around all the time. Oh, but I will also tell you, if you're into fake processed cheeses, the Frito-Lay queso cheese dip, it comes in a tall jar, and I actually think you can buy it in like 16-ounce jars and 20-ounce jars. And I mean, like, they just keep getting taller and taller. But you buy this queso cheese dip, and it's already pretty liquidy with the salsa in it, and you can just, it's meant to be poured out for football games or whatever, so that if you've got a bunch of people around, everyone can just kind of snack out of it. We wound up buying some of this over New Year's as just a decadent luxury sort of snack, because it's really, well, that's a lot of calories, and it's really, it's sinful. But we didn't eat much of it. We ate a little bit of it, and no big deal. And so here I've got this jar of queso dip in my fridge, just sitting there. And I discovered that, it makes a great condiment. Holy crap. Seriously, make yourself a hot dog and then just put on a spoonful of queso dip. Holy crap. That was so good. It is amazing the things that you can put queso dip on. You know what? I made myself a ham sandwich, and normally I just do ham and cheese, and I don't bother to put in. I've seen people when I was growing up, it was Miracle Whip on your bread, and then you put on your fillings, your cheese, your bologna, your ham, your whatever you're going to put in there. Or some people who butter their bread and then put stuff on it. Okay, whatever. But normally I eat my sandwiches dry, not because I don't like Miracle Whip, or mayonnaise, but because...
Are you lazy?
Well, no, it's because it's extra calories. The mayo or the Miracle Whip is fattening. And so I leave that stuff out, and I just eat them dry because, you know what? Bread, ham, cheese, that's actually pretty tasty, especially if the bread is toasted. And I really like that. But then I thought, hey, I've got this queso dip sitting here. What if I just do ham and a little bit of queso dip on top to give it that moisture that I would normally get from mayonnaise that I don't have? And so instead of cheese, I'll use the queso dip. And oh, my God, that was so good. So queso dip as a condiment? Spectacular. And it leads me to the conclusion that I should really just have a jar of queso dip in my fridge at all times for use as a condiment. But it turns out that if I have a jar of queso dip in my fridge at all times, I'm really tempted to, oh my God, wait, we have crackers? We have chips? Oh, well, let's break these suckers out and break my diet. And it's really bad for me. So, I shouldn't do that. But man, if I had any self-control, I would just keep it around so that I could keep it, you know, for my hot dogs. I never even tried with a burger. We're going to have spicy burgers coming up soon. Spicy burgers being the name my kids have given to, we make burgers that have tons of spice and hot sauce in them. And, they're really, really good.
And but, when it comes to Jacob, ghost peppers.
Yeah. And then Jacob also likes to have sliced ghost peppers on top. So wouldn't spicy burgers be the perfect place to throw on some queso dip onto that bun instead of cheese or mayo or whatever else? Oh, it would be perfect. But again, I can't trust myself around cheese dip. It's just not a good situation.
Then keep it with me.
I can't trust you. And where are you going to keep it? It has to be refrigerated. Where are you going to keep it? In the fridge in your room?
In the fridge in the basement, so you're less inclined to go walk down there to go get it.
If I know it's there, I'll go get it. I'm a bad, bad man. I absolutely, if I knew you had hidden it under your bed in a locked box, I would steal the key from your wallet and I would get it out from under your bed and I would eat the cheese dip. I love cheese dip.
Now the sandwich, you like huddled in my bed, like your face and hands covered in cheese dip. Just like, leave me alone.
I'd be like Gollum just rediscovering the ring. Yeah, no, it would be bad. Yeah, it would be bad, bad. Anyway, the number I just rolled, 25. 25 is?
5 squared?
Is 5 squared. That is exactly correct. Is also the square root of 625. That's exactly right. All right. Very good.
I am good.
You are brilliant. 25, which I think may be our last one, is from Ronster. Ronster says, are you a minimalist, a pack rat, or something in between? Minimalist. Minimalist. Oh, my goodness. Which balances perfectly with my wife, who is a pack rat. My wife, like her father, like my son Aiden, is one of those people who hates to get rid of stuff because, well, we might need it. I mean, you know, it's still good. What if somebody could use that? Well, okay, then we should sell it or give it away or, well, okay, you know, it's such a process to get rid of stuff. There's oftentimes, she will often tell me that, okay, look, if you're going to get rid of that, do it sometime when I'm not around and then don't tell me that you're doing it. And then you can go throw it away and then I'll never notice. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll do that. Cause if it were up to me, when it came time to clean out the attic or clean out the garage or whatever, my process would simply be to go rent a rollaway dumpster from our local garbage company. And then I would just get a shovel and I would load everything into it and then I'd let them take it away. And if as I'm shoveling, I happen to see something that caught my eye and I'm like, oh, hey, wait, we kind of need that. Then okay, I'd take that one back. But everything else can just go. Just take it. I don't care. If it's in boxes in the basement and I haven't looked at it in 6 years, guess what? I don't need it. I don't need it because I haven't even remembered that I own it. I don't care. It can go. Yes, Aiden.
How do you shovel boxes? I don't.
It's a metaphor, Aiden. I'm using my metaphorical shovel to throw things into the dumpster.
But you could get a better, like, lifting action with something other than a shovel if you're going to throw things.
Okay. And honestly, what I would really do is I would get my dumpster, my roll away, my whatever. And I would actually sort through stuff, but I'd pull everything out and go, nope, don't need it, don't need it, don't need it, don't need it. And I would just get rid of most stuff. It would be 95% of the things could just go or throw them in a pile of this can go to Goodwill. Cause you know, like if it's clothes, oh man, you cannot imagine how nice it was the day I finally convinced my wife that I could take all the baby clothes to Goodwill. Because, you know, you always hold on to the baby clothes. Well, what if we have another baby? What if we have another baby? Well, guess what? After I had the vasectomy, we weren't having another baby. So now I can get rid of them? Well, yeah, but, you know, my siblings are still having babies. They may want them. We can hand them down. Ah, okay, fine. But then it turns out that we're not going to because they already all had their own kids and they already all had their own hand-me-downs. And most of the stuff we have has been through four boys and it's old and ratty and the stuff that isn't ratty is stuff that's out of style. And it's finally, after I think the youngest was 4 years old, 5 years old, she finally went, okay, yeah, we're never going to hand that down to anybody else. You can go ahead and just give it away. I mean, I would have been happy to even just throw it away, but actually there was some good stuff in there. So I hauled it all down to Goodwill it was Goodwill. There's a few places in town we could turn stuff in. But I went to Goodwill with it, and I dumped off tote after tote after tote of old clothes, and we cleared out so much room down there. It was gorgeous. Really, really glad to do it. So, yeah, I am a minimalist. I am thrilled to death to just get rid of stuff. I don't need to keep anything. That's the magic of my office. We stopped having a printer in my office because why do I need a printer? God, it's on the computer. It's why do I need all this paper piled up? Why do I need to save any of this? No, just throw it away. Throw it all away. Don't care. And guess what? If I don't have a printer here, I'm not even generating more junk to file. Nobody wants that stuff. Nobody. Oh, this is great. Just clear it all out. That's my opinion. I said that was the last one, but I lied. We'll do one more. 67.
Is a prime number, question mark?
Is a prime number. Absolutely. 67 is from Humongous.
I'm sensing a theme.
Yes, there's a lot of Ronster and a lot of Humongous. Humongous says, do you have or would you ever get a tattoo? Aiden?
Sure.
You have a tattoo?
I don't have one, but I might.
Really? And if you were to get a tattoo right this moment, Mom and Dad said, you've got it. We will give you permission. We will even pay for it. We're going to take you out and get you a tattoo right this moment. What are you going
to
get?
You can't just do that. This takes time to think about. No, that's on my skin forever, dude.
Okay, I don't care because this is the Podomatic, and this is the nature of the Podomatic, is, yes, they ask you these huge, life-changing, life-affirming questions. that you really need a lot of time to think about. And guess what? You don't have time because it's on a podcast. So there, I stalled for an extra 20 seconds for you to think. Now, what are you going to get?
The word potato farm on my back in Japanese.
That's pretty good. Okay.
So I can tell people it says whatever I want it to at that point.
That's pretty good. All right. And if anyone ever translates it, they find out it means potato farm, and that becomes pretty funny in its own right. Is this the potato farm? Why, yes. I am Albert Potato. That's a quote from the movie Top Secret. I'm sorry. Pause for applause break. Excellent. All right. If I were to get a tattoo, I don't have any tattoos. My siblings both have tattoos. My wife, who also doesn't have a tattoo, all of her siblings have tattoos. We have lots of tattoos in the family. My children do not have any tattoos. However, my son's fiance has, what is she up to, three now?
3, 4, 12, I don't know.
I think it's three. She's got a gorgeous phoenix all the way across her back. And then she's got a couple other little ones. One's a little owl in honor of her mom, who was a teacher. Stuff. And so we've got tattoos on everybody around us, just none on us. I'm not against them. Jacob will eventually get himself a tattoo. Of course he will. He just hasn't gotten to it yet. If I were to get a tattoo, and at this point, I don't think I would, but if I were to get a tattoo, I would get some flaming dice. I would have a 20-sided and a 12-sided, on fire on my arm. I would probably put it right on my shoulder. Because again, one of my qualifications for a tattoo is that in a professional setting, it can be hidden, but it's also easy for me to look at, or at least easy to look at in a mirror. That kind of expands the range, and easy for me to show off. Even when I'm at work and I'm in a professional setting and I need to show off my tattoo, I can just push up the sleeve, and there it is. But I would do flaming polyhedral dice on my arm. Yes.
The dice should have rolled infinity on one and pi on the other.
Oh my god, infinity and pi on my...
And then Greek numerals for all the other sides.
That's pretty good. That's not a bad idea. Wow, I'd have to get a really good tattoo artist, and I'd need to see a really nice sketch first, but that's pretty slick. Infinity and pi is really good. All right. See, you're thinking for me. All right. I was about to roll again, but I'm not going to, because we have reached the end of the Pod-O-Matic, and that means there is nothing left but a recap from GLaDOS. Go ahead.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you. That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music is non-existent. I didn't use any of it this time. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, recommend it to a friend. That's the best thing you can do for me. If you enjoy this podcast, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well. Don't forget to check out all the games I have available for free on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free. All the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I promise you I will actually respond to you. Or you can find me on Twitter, where my handle is @nerdprideradio, or even check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we will be best friends in the world, we'll have fun! And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. This is the section of the podcast after the credits where I go back to the forums. I have already posted up and told everybody that I am recording and asked if there's anything that they want to add. Let's go see what they've got. First off, post reply, done. And now that we are all finished, dun, 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 there is only one comment. And it says, oh, it's from Eliahad, and Eliahad says, just in case you forgot to mention how awesome Darks is, you should mention how awesome Darks is. Really. Super awesome. That's what Eli says. All right. Oh my God, DM Darks is awesome. DM Darks, or Darks as I call him, Pat, is the host, one of the hosts of the Me Like Trivia podcast. Go listen to Me Like Trivia. Awesome. Darks is spectacular. He is our dungeon master for the Pathfinder Rise of the Rune Lords campaign that we are running on Roll20 on my website. And we have been having a phenomenal time. We just got through with book two. And, oh, by the way, I told you, last time we talked that my character was really concerned that she was infected with fungal spores and that there was something growing on her arms and she was just itchy and it felt wrong. And I also told you that I was absolutely positive that it was all in my head. Turns out it wasn't all in my head. And, oh, it's not funny, dude. Not funny. We wound up getting diagnosed and, turns out that, the halfling was infected. He had been bitten by a ghoul and he was infected and had not yet developed ghoul fever, but he was moments away. So we thought we were going to lose him to the undead at any moment. And then me and one of the other dudes in the room were both infected with some other mystery disease that we knew came from those stupid mold spores in the stupid haunted house. And so in a panic, we buy a cart, we rent some horses, we load up. And actually, we bought the horses outright. Anyway, we loaded up and we raced through the night. I mean, this was our midnight ride to the big city of Magnamar, which was the only nearby city that had healers for us. And we had, oh, it was a spectacular session. Great time. And we wound up getting there and just in time, and we wind up getting the healing done, and we're all going to be just fine. And now, hey, look, the next step of our adventure is probably supposed to be in Magmar anyway, so this is where we needed to be, and off we go. So that's not yet the part that makes Dark super awesome, although it did make Dark super awesome. There's actually more to it than that. I'm at work, and I'm talking to Joel. And my friend Super Nerd Joel at work, I'm telling him how awesome this campaign was and how much fun we were having and some of the cool stuff that went on. And I forgot that Joel is listening to another podcast, and I don't remember the name of the podcast. Sorry, otherwise I would credit it here, where it's an actual gameplay podcast where they're recording their actual game, and they are playing Rise of the Rune Lords. So they're playing the same campaign that we're in right now. And so, and they started a little bit before we did, but they're, I think, way ahead of where we are. They play live, and they play more often than we do. And so Joel knows a lot about what's going on in my campaign simply because he's listening to this other one. And he's really good about not revealing anything because, again, I forgot he was even listening to the damn thing. So as I'm telling him all this cool stuff going on, he says, okay, the only question I have, and he says, this won't give anything away. He says, the only question I have is, before you killed Aldern, Aldern was the head ghoul. I don't even know if that's even a real thing. But Aldern was a ghoul, and he had been a nobleman who we ran into and we had other encounters with, and it turns out that he's a ghoul, and he's been causing all this problem for us, and he's been stalking, especially stalking the halfling in our group and being really super creepy about it. And so Joel says, okay, before you killed Aldern, who did he pick as his new master from your group? That's where I had to stop. I'm like, wait. That creepy stalking crap was in the book? I mean, it was so, because here's the thing. Our halfling, Ilion, played by Eliahad, our halfling Ilion had a very detailed background that's intimately tied in with my background and a bunch of other, anyway, we have very well-developed character backgrounds. And this stuff that was going on with, he was getting these creepy notes from someone who kept calling him, I think, your lordship or my lord or something like this. But it wound up being from Aldern, and clearly Aldern was trying to pay some sort of allegiance to Ilion. And it tied in so well to the stuff that we had already prepared. It tied in so well to the things that we were doing, that I just assumed that this was an add-on, that this was because the halfling is playing out some personal history, personal problems stuff that he built into his character from the beginning. And as he's playing these out throughout the course of the adventure, this Aldern stuff just tied into it perfectly. It was exactly, I mean, it was right there as if Eliahad had written it for himself. And so I assumed that our dungeon master, Darks, I assumed that he had just made all that stuff up and that he made this up based on the backgrounds we gave him and was just using that to play off of the adventure, which I thought was really impressive anyway. But it turns out, no. That was actually written into the book itself. That the book itself said that he would pick one of us to be his master and that he would do this and this and this. And Darks managed to integrate that so seamlessly into our own personal stories and the stuff we had given to him that we just assumed it was all him. We just assumed that it was, and I don't, like I said when I posted this on the boards, I don't know why that impresses me more than thinking that he just made it all up. No, he didn't make it all up. He got it from the book and then he worked it in so well that we couldn't tell the difference. And somehow that impresses me even more. He is awesome. This game is spectacular. I am so deep into this thing that I have my character is written out and we're at fifth level now? All right. I already have the sixth level version of my character written up and ready, and it's missing some gaps. I don't fill in what spells I'm going to take and this kind of stuff, but I've got most of the skills are already worked out and what feat I need and this kind of stuff. I already got the sixth level version of my character worked out. Oh yeah. And then step beyond that, I also have the seventh level version of my character worked out because I'm really working towards getting a certain magic item and I have certain steps I need to do and I need to make sure it was all going to work out. So, I'm not going to level up to seventh level for at least like another 6 months. And yet here I am already having it plotted out on paper just, cause I need to be prepared for when the time comes. I am really, really hooked on this campaign. And yeah, you are absolutely right, dude. Darks is awesome. Holy cow. This game is so, so good. If you don't play Pathfinder, oh my God, go find a group and play some Pathfinder. You'll love it. Ha. Is there anything else I need? Oh, hey, I have a hand up over here. Yes, get on mic, man.
What if Eli wasn't talking about the D&D game? What if he was just talking about Darks in general?
Oh, all right. That's a good point. Eliad did not say that this was about Darks being awesome because of Pathfinder. He didn't. I mean, I assumed it because I had just posted a thread to talk about how awesome Darks is. But he may have just been talking about in general in real life as a friend. In which case, oh my God. Darks is awesome. Did I tell you I'm going to go to Gen Con with him? Yeah, this summer, me and
Aiden, I'm going too.
And Aiden are going to Gen Con together. And as we were making plans, Pat and Dave, Dave being Eliahad, who was also Ilian the halfling from the game. Anyway, Pat,
AKA.
Pat and Dave also said, you know what? Maybe we could make this work. So, and they live on opposite sides of the country from each other as well. And so the four of us now, I think, are going to wind up going to Gen Con together and it's going to be spectacular. We've already got a room reserved. Tickets are coming up in, today. I'm recording this on the 10th and I'm hopefully going to release it on the 10th as well. We'll see if I can get it out tonight. But today is the 10th. I think the 25th is the day that I can go buy my passes. So we've got the room reserved already. We did that at 1 year ahead of time. As soon as reservations were open, we reserved a room. We're going to buy our passes on the 25th because that's the first day that you can buy passes. And then I think May 17th is when you can actually sign up for stuff once you can actually register for particular events. We're going to do that. And it is going to be the best time ever. I am so looking forward to this because I don't know if you guys know my son Aiden, but he is awesome. And I've been looking forward to this with him for years. And then the idea that I'm also going to get to meet up with some friends that, I mean, I've met Dave in person one time and Pat, Darks, the awesomest. I've never met him in person at all. For all I know, he could be a troll. I mean, we have no idea, but, he seems pretty cool. So, I think we're going to wind up having a great time. And in fact, Darks says he's bringing Cards Against Humanity with him. And, I know. Didn't you know that?
No!
Yeah. And he was polite enough to go to say, yeah, I was thinking about playing Cards Against Humanity. I mean, but your kid's going to be there. So if you don't want me to bring it, I'm like, dude, seriously, he's 17. What do I care? Of course he Cards Against Humanity. Of course. Jesus, he could have played that last year. He's fine. No, we're good. We're good. It'll be great.
I don't care about his sanity. Gosh.
That's right. Or your moral compass or your. Yeah, who cares? We'll corrupt you. It's fine. You can't drink, though. No drinking. I know. I'm rough. So, yeah, we're going to have a great time. We're going to play some Cards Against Humanity. I will bring along Munchkin that we'll probably wind up not having time to play, but I'll have it with me just in case. And I'll bring along Zombie Cinema, which we may also not have time to play, but I'll bring it along just in case. And, yeah, we'll have all sorts of stuff. And it'll be a great time. And anyway, I don't want to ramble on about that. That's all for later. I'm sure you guys will get tons and tons of updates from me about Gen Con progress building up to it and then afterwards. And you'll be so sick of it by the time I'm done, you'll be glad I've finished. It'll be wonderful. So anyway, that's all I got. Say goodnight, R2. Spectacular.